Hey, Counties, we know you love podcasts, so we've got something to tell you.
We are going to be virtually attending the Podcast Movement Festival this October, and we think you should come too.
If you've ever thought about starting a podcast of your own, this is the event for you. Usually it's an in-person extravaganza. Arielle goes every year, and this will be my first time, and she comes back with so much pod swag, and I'm
So much pod swag.
I'm always very jealous of all the pod swag. And so this year it's a little different, but the good news is that it's a little cheaper and you get the knowledge and connections you need to start that podcast.
Yeah, sorry you won't be able to get a swimming pool's worth of podcast pins to swim in, but that's okay because attending online means that it's cheaper, it's more accessible, you can listen to it anytime. Podcast Movement is from October 19th through 29th. It's a really long time, and it's all online. They're giving counter-programming listeners 20% off the price of any ticket if you go to events.podcastmovement.com and purchase your ticket by the end of August. Just use the code COUNTER, C-O-U-N-T-E-R.
You can expect to hear the secrets to podcasting from the industry's best and brightest. You'll learn how to monetize your show, how to find the best guests, and so much more. Plus, we'll be there.
Plus, there's a lot of podcast famous people there. So if you're a big time podcast listener, you may recognize some of the speakers. Just head on over to their website. It's podcastmovement.com.
So meet us virtually at Podcast Movement or watch and listen to the presentations on your own time and from anywhere in the world. Again, use code COUNTER at checkout to get 20% off of your ticket. Head to events.podcastmovement.com to claim that offer.
That's events.podcastmovement.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, my name is Melissa. What's that sizzling? It's cooking apples. You're listening to Counter Programming with Shira and Ariel.
Want to start us off?
Wow, happy to be back together. Hello, and welcome to Counter Programming. I'm Shira.
And I'm Ariel.
And we're back, baby! Last week, we recorded separately because we had some internet connection issues, and dang, does it feel good to be back at it with just a screen and 40-something miles separating us.
On this show, we bring you Counter Programming. We are your COVID-19 distraction cast, and we exist to bring you fun facts and stories that cover any topic with the word count or counter in the title. We've been at it since April, and we were recently featured on Apple's New and Noteworthy, which was huge for us.
Huge. I also can't believe it's been since April. Last week, we covered the 2000 film You Can Count on Me, and then I interviewed my brother Ari about advanced counting methods, aka combinatorics. Make sure that you check out our older episodes once you're finished listening to this one. Our archive will keep you entertained for hours.
Truly hours and hours of counter-programming content. So strap on that mask and let's get to counter-programming.
This week's topic, blood count and sperm count. We're combining two bodily fluids for a podcast episode that is sure to gross out some of our regulars and bring in a whole slew of newbies. Welcome, medical community.
And other weirdos who search for things with sperm in the title. A disclaimer, everybody, we are not medical professionals, just internet sleuths who like to tell stories about counter-programming.
We'll get into the blood and sperm of it all shortly, but before we do, Ariel, how are you?
How am I? Counties, what am I up to lately? I'm preparing shortly. I'm going to be moving to Portland, Maine, so that's an exciting thing. Today I cleaned out my childhood bedroom. And as some of my followers on Instagram may have seen, and Shira, I don't know if you saw this. Do you remember Miachis from the summer of 2008?
So I saw you had posted that and I vaguely remember them, but I definitely did not play with them.
Yeah. I was at summer camp in 2008. It was my last summer as a camper. It was basically the fidget spinners of its day. There were these little beanbag sacks about the size of a Kit Kat bar, I would say. And the way you were meant to play with them is that you would put them on the back of your hand where your fingers are, and you would flip them back and forth between hand to hand. And people got really good at doing some moves, spin around, catch it on your hand. And it was all the rage in the summer of 2008. And today, cleaning out my bedroom, I found my Miachi. And I also remember summer 2008, there was a stomach flu going around. And people were starting rumors at camp that the Miachi started the stomach flu. spoil a good time, am I right?
I also, yeah. I saw that you found your old glasses from middle school, and I meant to send you a picture in response of me wearing my old glasses, so I'll go do that after we finish recording.
Yeah, and we'll definitely post those photos on our Instagram. Yeah, so Shira's right. I found my glasses from sixth grade and then my pair of glasses that I used in college, and I'm really glad that the glasses trend has gone from very small to much larger frames, because I hated having to see the frames. It bothered me so much.
One of my challenges was that because I started wearing glasses super young, when I was like 4. And so then I was still wearing
glasses kid.
Oh, yeah. I was a glasses kid. I was still wearing like glasses from like the children's section. But then I was in seventh grade and my face was starting to get bigger. Mm-hmm. So they like were, they would stretch.
I know that look.
Yeah. It wasn't cute. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. But it's adorable at the same time.
Now it's funny to look back on. When I first started wearing glasses, I had like huge round glasses that like,
wire frames, of course,
obviously. And like crazy curly hair. So it was a sight to be seen.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Shira, how are you? How's your week been going?
I'm good. I had a weird week. I was just feeling like kind of anxious. But for some reason today, normally I'm not a huge fan of like a big thunderstorm, but I went for a long walk in the rain and it felt so good, even though I didn't dress appropriately. So my feet are now stained black because my shoes bled like onto my heel and so did my socks. But it was very cathartic and I'm excited. It gave me good mojo for going to this next week. I'm trying to think of anything else.
I love a rain walk. That's great. I meant to go on one, but the day slipped away from me. It really did.
That's that.
Well, now that we're checked in, counties, we need to hear from you for an episode that we're starting to put together. We want to hear your counting stories. Do you remember learning to count as a kid? Do you have any fun or traumatizing math class stories? What about a time that you thought one number was a different number and your cake exploded in your oven? We'd love to hear about that. We want to hear it all.
And we'll even share some of our own stories too. I have a math class romance I'm going to let you in on.
Oh, good.
But record your story, any length, any topic related to counting.
Although probably keep it to less than 4 minutes.
Yeah.
What do you say? Yeah.
I agree. Related to counting or like loosely related. You define how you relate and send it to us at counterprogramming, ShiraArielle@gmail.com. And we're going to put together all of your stories for a special County Crowd episode. Again, email those voice clips to us at counterprogramming, ShiraArielle@gmail.com.
We are super excited to have that episode put together. And then just a note that as we lead up to the election for president, it feels very different from the 2016 lead up to the election because we don't have any in-person events, but we are going to be shifting gears as we get closer. We're going to be recording a few special election related episodes. For example, your vote counts, get it, counts. Another one is recounts, like the 2000 election. Another one is counting down until the election. So we've got a few count/vote related episodes coming your way. So stay tuned. We even got a special art commissioned by Kyle Slichta, who's our logo designer. It's super cute. It has us waving flags that say vote on it. And we posted it on our Instagram. So go check that out. And without further ado, I think it is time for Blood and Sperm Count.
This episode will acknowledge the existence of sex. So if you're listening with little kids and want them to develop positive notions around sex and sexuality, this may be a fun listen. Otherwise, listen in for the beginning section on blood count. And when we get to sperm, you may want to skip ahead or put those headphones on.
I don't know why you got to do it in front of the kid. All you got to do is say earmuffs to him. Earmuffs.
We did some research and we learned a lot throughout the process. So let's jump into it. First up, we've got blood count, everybody. Blood count tests measure the number and types of cells in your blood. They help doctors check on your overall health. The tests can also help to diagnose diseases and conditions such as anemia, infections of any sort, clotting problems, blood cancers, and immune system disorders. And that definition comes to us from Medline Plus.
Usually, when you get your blood count tested, you get what's called a complete blood count, or a CBC.
Not to be confused with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
I did actually type in CBC at one point and then started getting all these things for that CBC. Anyways, the results of your CBC determine the amount of white blood cells, red blood cells, platelets, concentration of hemoglobin, and hematocrit, which is the volume percentage of red blood cells. Obviously, this isn't a medical podcast, and we aren't going to go too much deeper than that on the science side of things, because then we'd really be making things up. But we've got some fun stories as they relate to the history and discovery of blood count tests.
Before we get to those stories, we want to give you the real rundown of what you need to know about a CBC. So basically, a CBC is part of a larger medical exam that you might get when going in to the doctor or your general practitioner. It's used to evaluate your overall health and to diagnose diseases. The results of your CBC are interpreted by comparing them to reference ranges, which are based on age and gender. So how does your CBC look compared to other people your age or of your gender? Through a CBC, you can find out if you're anemic, like we said, lacking in iron, like maybe you're not eating enough meat. You can also find out if you have, this is going to be a word to pronounce, thrombocytopenia. That sounded good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you
can
find out.
I'm not a doctor. I don't know exactly if that's how you say it, but I liked how it sounded.
Thank you. I said it fast. I think that's what it was. So you can find out if you have thrombocytopenia, which means that you may have an abnormally low number of platelets, which is not good. If you dig into your CBC results further, you might be able to find out what's causing the anemia, whether it's iron deficiency or B12 deficiency. A CBC test can also tell you what's going on with your white blood cells and can help diagnose viral, bacterial, and parasitic infections, and even blood disorders like leukemia.
Fascinating.
Very.
I'm done with the science part.
Yeah. Yeah, goodbye.
Let's move away from the science, though, and step into the humans behind a CBC or a full blood count. Shall we say?
We shall say.
There are a bunch of prominent figures, mostly men, who would have guessed, that had big roles in discovering the significance of a blood count test.
We've got a lot of names here and a lot of fun facts and a lot of names that are going to be tough to pronounce, so stick with us, counties. First off, we've got Antony von Leeuwenhoek. And the reason I know how to pronounce that, I'll get to in a moment. But he was the earliest person to publish microscopic observations of blood cells. He was Dutch, as you can imagine from the last name, van Leeuwenhoek. In 1675, van Leeuwenhoek viewed his blood through a microscope of his own design and described it as consisting of, quote, small red globules driven through a crystalline humidity of water.
Yum.
By the way, Shira, did you read Girl with the Pearl Earring?
I didn't.
So I remember reading it in sixth grade, and have you seen the painting?
I haven't.
You know nothing.
Well, just Google it later, and we'll also have a link to it in the show notes of this episode. It's a very iconic painting. It's Dutch. It's by this Dutch artist named Johannes Vermeer, and I recognize the name van Leeuwenhoek because, and then I did some digging, and this might be interesting to some of our counties. Apparently, Vermeer, he painted a lot, but he was in a lot of debt by the time that he died. And his wife, they had 11 kids together. And his wife obviously was in dire straits after he died because he was the main breadwinner. And the person who was appointed to take over the estate of Vermeer, the painter, was van Leeuwenhoek. Isn't that an interesting, strange tie here?
Fascinating.
Yeah. So van Leeuwenhoek, in addition to making strides of discovery in medicine, was also involved in, he was on some sort of government board that ultimately appointed him to take over this artist's estate. So he was medical and he was also civically engaged.
Love to see it.
Love it.
A hobby and a career. That's what we're all about. Next up, we have Carl von Wieert.
Sure.
The physiologist. He is credited with performing the first blood count in 1852 at a university in Germany.
Tübingen, maybe.
Sure. He developed a pretty interesting method that involved a popular breakfast food. His technique involved breathing in a carefully measured volume of blood into a capillary tube and then spreading it onto a microscope slide coated with egg whites.
I would eat that.
Voila, breakfast is ready.
That's gross. After the blood dried, he counted every cell on the slide. Obviously, this process would take like up to 3 hours to complete. I guess the amount of time isn't obvious, but it's obvious that it would take a long time. So not so efficient, which will bring us to
Louis Charles Malassez. He introduced the hemocytometer in 1874, and that simplified the counting of microscopic blood cells. So we go from counting it by hand, then we get a machine that does it, and you'll see as we keep going, it gets easier and easier. Who's the next doctor, Shira?
Paul Ehrlich. He was a German doctor and scientist who helped discover the cure for syphilis and went on to win a Nobel Prize for his work in immunity in 1908, but that's not really relevant for our purposes. The most relevant thing is that
syphilis is always relevant.
Yes. The most relevant thing is that he was Jewish.
Oh, of course. That's the most relevant. That's why you wanted to breeze through my joke, which wasn't a good joke, because you wanted to do that one.
There are a lot of references to his Jewish heritage on his Wikipedia. But actually, the reason that he's important for us is because in the late 1870s, he created a staining technique on blood to discover new blood cells. Yeah. And this made it possible for the first time to distinguish between different parts of the white blood cell.
That brings us to our next doctor slash physician. His name was Dmitry Romanowski, who was a Russian physician, most famous for the invention of the Romanowski stains, a clever name, which are used to differentiate cells in blood and bone marrow to determine if there are parasites in the samples.
Next up, we have Maxwell Wintrobe. He was one of the creators of automated methods for measuring hemoglobin in the 1920s, and he called his method the Wintrobe hematocrit method. Again, another clever name.
I love when these guys just name things after themselves. It's so great.
Yeah. I mean, we did make a podcast and named it after ourselves. But
yeah, but I don't know. Name different. It after your mom.
This method allowed him to define red blood cell indices, which I looked up. It means it shows like how big the red blood cells are.
Good. I love a hematocrit method.
Yeah.
That brings us to Wallace H. Coulter. He patented it. So who knows who is behind the scenes creating it?
Probably a
you
woman.
behind the scenes. Well, you guessed it. It's the Coulter principle. He named it after himself again. 1953. This involves using electrical impedance. This is some sort of electrical circuit, measurements of the electrical circuit to count blood cells and measure their sizes. And people still use the Coulter principle today.
In the 1970s, research involved the use of optical measurements, aka the physics of how light moves, to count and identify cells. Wikipedia didn't attribute this to any given person, and I'm confused by all this medical stuff, so tap out.
Tap out. But good to know that there are tons of men behind the history of blood cell counting. And at the end of it all, there were more people, more inventions for us to check out. We decided that we were a little bit bored of reading about dead white men, and we researched some women who were involved in the science and discovery of blood counts. It was a pretty leading search. We really just wanted to find any woman at all who was involved in this, and it led us to gold.
Do you guys remember Elizabeth Holmes and the whole Theranos scandal?
I do, because I listen to the podcast, and I am very excited for you, Shira. You said you haven't listened yet, right?
I haven't listened. I watched half the HBO documentary. Like, you know how my roommate was watching it, and you know how you, like, come in, and you just think you'll sit down for a second, and then you get really hooked? So I've seen the second half of the HBO special, but after reading all the information we found today, I'm ready to dive into the entire podcast.
About to go for a rain walk, get that done.
That's this week's project.
For anyone who doesn't remember, Elizabeth Holmes was attending Stanford and she dropped out of college to found her company Theranos with the goal of making healthcare affordable and accessible, which seems awesome. I love that idea. Drop out of college, do your thing.
Amazing idea. You have so much hope and you're like young women. Let's go.
Yeah, you would understand why, first of all, people would give her money to do that. Second of all, why she wouldn't get too much flack. Like, if you have the idea and you have the know-how and you have the fundraising abilities to go out and do this, go ahead. With that in mind, in 2013, Theranos released a blood test that could be done with just a pinprick and a drop of blood, and it could run 30 different tests from that one drop of blood. The test could be done in convenient locations and would give you results right away. Again, amazing idea.
It truly, like, I'm not afraid of needles, but part of what she talked about in an old article I read was that, like, she hated needles and that's why she wanted to create this. And then also she wanted people to know their results quickly and, like, have access to all this information. It's all so good at this point. It all right. sounds so freaking good.
The company, and obviously it was helmed by Elizabeth Holmes, they had grand claims about what this new type of blood count device could do. And it's true, blood can really tell you a lot about a person, and it can give you a lot of information about a person's past health records, current health records, and potentially the future as well.
But Theranos wasn't all it was cracked up to be. We found a great timeline on Business Insider that we will definitely link to in the show notes, because you should read the whole thing, but here are some highlights. So starting in 2013, as Theranos began partnering with larger clinics, medical professionals from the clinic started to notice discrepancies in the tests. Similarly, some Theranos employees were raising red flags about issues with the technology and unethical practices. But in July 2015, they still got FDA approval. And at this point, Holmes has a net worth of over $5 billion. And I think she's only like 30 at this point.
Yeah, she's super young.
Crazy.
Basically, what Theranos was purporting that the company could do was technology that was not available and might not be available for a long time. But people wanted to believe that it was true. Then October comes around and an article comes out about the issues that Theranos was having with their blood testing technology, and their partnerships with clinics like Safeway and Walgreens fall through.
By April 2016, the SEC and the CMS, who oversee lab testing, had launched investigations into Theranos.
In July, Elizabeth Holmes was banned from lab testing for 2 years, and she pivoted the business to focus on other medical procedures, which I guess makes sense. Stay away from the thing that's giving you a lot of trouble. Question, Shira.
It seems crazy. Like, someone is doing something that's fishy in regard to lab testing. You're like, yeah, 2 years, 2 years. That's fine.
Right, you're banned for 2 years. Then come back, try it again.
That's it. Go to your room.
Like, it doesn't seem like something that's how that should work.
I know. Okay. And the podcast is called The Dropout, and it just makes you question her motives. Is it just to be rich? And if so, then how did she so genuinely convince so many people to give her money for this? And I'll go into a little bit of the details on that in a second, but it's a really juicy scandal. Theranos eventually gets shut down in 2018. They were sued by a bunch of patients for faulty tests, and they were charged with wire fraud as well. Super juicy. The scandal involves wealthy donors who Holmes allegedly manipulated, wealthy older donors too, and her lover was in a position of leadership within the company as well. It's bad stuff, and it's not really a great example of a leading lady in STEM. But counties, if you know of any women in the blood count field or the medical profession in general who do rock, please DM us on Instagram. We're at Counter Programming Pod, and we'd love to honor those ladies in STEM.
That is a really quick summary of the timeline, and now I'm hooked. As I said, I'm going to listen to the entire podcast, which is called Dropout, this week, and Kate McKinnon is turning it into a TV show, which is so
exciting.
And she really looks the part. She does. She's producing and acting in it. She's so
that makes
cool.
sense.
I really love her.
P.S. Fun fact, Shira, Elizabeth Holmes was obsessed with the Silicon Valley-ness and tech startup-y stuff that she was doing. Again, like I said, she went to Stanford. She was raising all this money in the Bay Area. So she was famous for wearing black turtlenecks like Steve Jobs, which is like, ugh.
Yeah, it's a lot. I have so much content now I need to consume.
People also say that she manipulated her voice to sound deeper, and that might be a move to sound, you know, like if you sound like this, people might not take you seriously, but if you tone it down and people think you have a unique, mature voice, that's a different story.
Yeah. Not that I want to, she did some bad things, especially because she gave us such false hope about what could happen that would make healthcare more accessible for everyone. But it sucks that we live in a world where women have to feel like they have to change their voice to have more authority.
Yeah. And make up false technology.
Also that. That's bad. Don't do that, please.
Yeah. All right, everybody. That is it for us on blood count. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to tell you all about sperm count. Hey, 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 counties. How the heck are you doing? We are going to tell you about one of our episode sponsors. Get ready to learn all about the Made to Order podcast. I know, a podcast advertising a product called Made to Order Podcast. It's super meta, right? But get ready because this is the perfect COVID-friendly gift for a friend or a family member.
Made to Order Podcast works with you to learn your story, then crafts it into a one-of-a-kind script. Then it's produced with a professional narrator and music, and it's turned into a high-quality MP3 file that you can send around the world.
You can get Made to Order Podcast for your mom, your brother, your dog, or even yourself. Once you receive your gift, you can play it anywhere. A wedding, a Zoom wedding, a birthday party, a Zoom birthday party, a happy hour, a Zoom happy hour. Anywhere, truly anywhere. I actually did this for my mom for Mother's Day, and she loved it. I did some research, talked to her siblings to get stories that only they could remember, then sent all the information to Made to Order Podcast. They made it into a beautiful audio present, all wrapped up in a virtual bow.
I think I might need to do this. I have some ideas for upcoming celebrations that I will use this for. Your podcast with Made to Order Podcast also includes two podcast style advertisements based on your interests, hobbies, and funny stories.
To learn more and get started on this audio gift, visit madetoorderpodcast.com. Create your personalized podcast today with Made to Order Podcast.
Again, that's madetoorderpodcast.com. Have fun, Counties.
All right, we are back and we're ready to talk about sperm count. Shira, how are you feeling about sperm count? Are you ready? Are you feeling like it's a little bit early to talk about sperm count? Maybe you're prematurely ready? I don't know.
Oh, you were waiting for that joke, Ariel.
Oh, God, it's terrible.
I found researching this section was really interesting, just not something I was super aware of. According to Healthline Parenthood, a normal sperm count ranges from 15 million sperm to more than 200 million sperm per milliliter of semen. That's a huge range. Anything less is considered low. A low sperm count is often called, another medical term, oligospermia. Oligospermia.
Oh, man. But what actually is sperm count? Sperm count, aka semen analysis, evaluates certain characteristics of a male's semen and the sperm contained therein. I remember hearing about sperm count in middle school and high school. There were rumors that if boys had laptops in their crotches, that their sperm count could go down. Do you remember this?
Okay, honestly, I get nervous to have my laptop on my lap because
me too.
I'm scared that I'm like killing my...
frying my eggs.
Yeah. No, that... I don't know if that's a rumor. We're not medical professionals. Do not trust us. I'm just saying... I'm afraid of it too.
But what I'm saying is that's the only thing I really heard about sperm count was like, oh, don't drink Sprite. Your sperm count's going to go down. Blah, blah, blah. That's really bad for your sperm count. Mountain Dew was the rumor. Do you remember that?
What were you and your friends talking about in middle school? I'm so confused.
Maybe it was high school camp. I don't know.
Okay. But not something I had heard.
Let's go into some real facts about sperm count. How does that sound?
That sounds great. You can test your sperm count through a semen analysis, which will test for three main things. Number one, the number of sperm. Number two, the shape of the sperm. And number three, the sperm's mobility.
So I think it's important to point out the difference between sperm and semen.
Okay.
So semen is the ejaculate. Now I sound medical, but I'm not. Semen is the ejaculate and sperm is within the ejaculate. Does that make sense? And sperm is what then swims to the egg to impregnate, or it just dies because you're not having a release for the sake of impregnation. Is that a word?
Yeah, I think so. If I didn't know better, I would almost assume you were a doctor from that definition.
A semen analysis will test for physical characteristics of semen, like color, odor, pH balance, viscosity, and liquefaction. It'll also test for volume, concentration, morphology, and sperm motility and progression. Do you remember flagella from high school?
Vaguely.
Flagella, I believe, is the organelle that propels anything forward, and flagella are on the end of sperm. So if you look at a sperm under a microscope, there's little things that look like they're swimming, and that's the flagella. So motility and progression, the progress that they're making on their way ultimately to meet an egg in order to impregnate that, that's the flagella that's doing the movement.
You did great in biology.
Truth is, I didn't. I just remember that because it's sexual.
Oh, Lord. Just an FYI from our research, the at-home test that you can do will only test for the number, which won't give you the full picture if you're having trouble getting pregnant. But regardless, talk to a doctor because we're just discovering all this information for the first time.
Also, if you're struggling to get pregnant and you found this episode because we did a good job ranking for search terms that you typed in, we won't be your best bet at finding answers, but we will have a podcast recommendation at the end of this episode. So stay with us and search again because we're not your be all and end all.
The most common reasons for getting semen analysis done for humans is for fertility. Whether you're trying to get pregnant or if you're trying to stop being able to get pregnant, aka testing a vasectomy's effectiveness. Sperm counts are also used for testing human donors for sperm donation and for animal semen analysis when getting animals ready for breeding purposes.
I'm not really well versed in the world of buying and selling animals based on their breeding purposes, but I did stay at a farm this summer, as we know.
That's true.
And the person who was hosting us, Bianca, shout out Bianca, she was telling us that her goats, she gets them pregnant once a year. And the way they do that is they bring in a male goat. I don't know the technical name of that. And I imagine that they would want to know ahead of time if the pregnancy is going to be viable. So you want to know that the male is young, his sperm count is good, maybe he's had success in the past. So these are all things that you would think about.
A farmer, a biologist, nearly a doctor.
So Shira, why does sperm count matter?
Well, if you're trying to get pregnant, it's a game of probability. Obviously, you only need one sperm to fertilize one egg, but the more sperm you have, the more likely that fertilization is to happen. But sperm count can also be an indicator of your overall health, just like the CBC test. While there can be medical reasons for low sperm count, such as past surgeries, STIs, or even genetics, there are some things you can do at home to improve your health and potentially your sperm count before looking into surgery or hormone treatment. But again, we're not doctors, and this is just what we found on the dark web. So consult your doctor before doing any of the things we mentioned.
And a reminder that what we call the dark web is just anything that takes us beyond the third search item on Google.
And sometimes I use it for the second search item.
So anyway, here are some of those things that you can do. You can try to lose weight. You can exercise. You can take your vitamins.
The website said especially vitamin D, C, E, and CoQ10. Have you ever heard of that vitamin? Like, what is that?
How do you get that?
I don't know. Can someone DM us, tell us about that? Also, my doctor told me that you like pee out vitamins and they don't even really work. So
they don't work. Yeah. You can avoid substance abuse. You can avoid toxins like pesticides and non-water-based paints. I don't like to eat those anyway.
Well, I think it's more like being around them, not eating them, but also don't eat them.
Yeah, don't eat them. And you can also check your bike for a proper fit and wear loose boxers.
I feel like those kind of went out of style, though.
Oh, yeah. No, they're not cool anymore.
Yeah. I haven't seen an ad for them in years.
But then again, we haven't been around teenagers in that situation in years. So,
yes. I found this very interesting because I feel like I've only really discussed infertility and challenges with getting pregnant with other women. And I honestly just hadn't thought about how sperm count impact that all. And I feel like the media also really only portrays women as having issues that make it difficult for them getting pregnant. So I just was something I was thinking about. I think in parenthood, they both get tested. I think it is still ultimately a challenge that the woman's having, but I can't exactly remember, but that show is the best show ever. And they do such a good job dealing with all these issues. So I love Parenthood. One piece of advice that I thought was particularly helpful was about when to actually see a doctor. So according to the internet, the general wisdom is that couples should see a doctor after trying to get pregnant for 1 year, or females over 35, they should go after 6 months. So you got to give it the good old college try, as they say.
I want to shout out a podcast that my friends produced a few years back. It's called Immaculate Conception. I don't know if I told you about this one, Shira.
No, I'm excited to hear about it.
It's my friend Abby Feeder and her husband Isaac. They were trying to get pregnant for years and years, and they were having a lot of trouble. And the podcast basically details every doctor's visit that they went through, every phone call from the doctor, crying, laughing so much, every test that they took, really even some really difficult things. It's a really raw look at what infertility looks like for couples today, and it's definitely worth checking out.
That sounds really incredible, actually. I feel like there's so much misinformation out there, and I think it's important to hear real people's stories, and I am excited to give that a listen.
Well, Shira, it was fun pretending to get medical with you this week. We'll be back next week with more counter-programming, counties.
We've got to ask for one more thing before we head out. If you have a moment and you enjoy this show, why not give us a review on Apple Podcasts? It helps other potential listeners find the show by telling the Apple algorithm that there are people listening and enjoying. We really appreciate it. Thanks, counties.
Thank you. At the beginning of this episode, you heard from a county who lent their voice to be part of our intro. You can be famous like that, too. All you need to do is record a short voice clip on your phone and send it to us at counterprogrammingshiraariel@gmail.com. Shira, what would that voice clip sound like?
Hi, I'm Anthony Van Leeuwenhoek from the Netherlands. I discovered the science of blood counts, and you're listening to Counter Programming with Shira and Ariel.
Exactly. That's exactly how it should sound. Thank you to Daniel Turek, who is the sound guy behind this whole operation. You can find his work at robotslap.com, and you can hire him for your next audio project.
Our music is by Jason Shaw, and the song is called Tennessee Hayride. I think my next quarantine activity will be to make up a Cotton Eye Joe-type coordinated dance to Tennessee Hayride. Who's with me?
As always, thank you to you, counties. Thanks for tuning in week after week. We love ya.
Count that blood and count those sperm. Bye, Ariel.
Bye, Shira.
Bye, counties.
Count that blood and count that sperm.
Oh, goodness.
Counties, you still there? Well, stick around for another minute to learn about one of our advertisers and also how to find a romantic partner.
If you're looking for love during this pandemic and are sick of the apps, you might want to try out the number one relationship coaching service. It's called Relationship Hero, and we're obsessed with the way they do things in the love department. Relationship Hero learns about you, your needs, who and what you're looking for in a partner, and then coaches you along in your journey.
Relationship Hero is also there for you as you navigate through the tough parts of a relationship, or even through a breakup. Their coaches are available 24/7 to help you accomplish your relationship goals.
Here at Counter Programming, you may think we want to teach you about count and counter-related topics, but truthfully, it's all just a metaphor for love, isn't it? Go to relationshiphero.com/counter to support Counter Programming and get $50 off your first one-hour coaching session with Relationship Hero. You heard that right. If you fall in love through Relationship Hero, you're helping Counter Programming. That's real dedication to the podcast.
We love a dedicated county. Again, that's relationshiphero.com/counter to get $50 off of your first one-hour session with a relationship coach.
Visit their website to learn more and sign up. Again, that's relationshiphero.com/counter. Bye, counties.
Bye, counties. Go fall in love.